62 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Peter King. The numbers are inevitably rising hour by hour, and Israel says the death toll there is now more than 1,400. On the ninth day of fighting, the first funerals have been held in Israel. The Gaza Health Ministry says more than 2,400 people have been killed on its side of the border. Secretary of State Antony Blinken's shuttle diplomacy has come up with a big win. He says Egypt has agreed to open a border with Gaza as an escape route and to get humanitarian aid in.
Rafah will be open. We're putting in place with the United Nations, with Egypt, with Israel, with others, the mechanism by which to get the assistance in and to get it to the people who need it.
The U.S. has sent a second carrier group to the eastern Mediterranean. CBS News military analyst Jeff McCausland.
Second carrier strike force just underscores the United States' determination to try to deter an expansion of this particular conflict. A carrier strike force is 100,000 tons of American diplomacy sitting off your shore looking at you. And that will not be lost on the Iranians. That will not be lost on Hezbollah.
The Israeli military says it's detained more than 200 Hamas members since the fighting began. It's also contacted families of 155 people taken hostage by Hamas. There have been dozens of protests by supporters of both sides around the world and in this country this weekend. KCTV's Grace Smith is in Kansas City, Missouri.
Many Palestinians out here rallying today told me they are fighting for basic human rights for their people and for peace. One man telling me that his family has died during this war and the ones who are alive have been stripped of everything.
Before the situation started, things were horrible. Can you imagine how things are right now?
Ohio Republican Jim Jordan wants to be the next House Speaker. Not even a GOP majority can guarantee that he'll get it. The seat has been vacant for nearly 2 weeks. Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries tells NBC's Meet the Press it's time for the House to move forward.
We have not identified any candidate on the other side of the aisle because our focus is not on the individual. It's on the institution of Congress and the best interests of the American people.
The vote will come on Tuesday. Another strong earthquake has hit western Afghanistan, the BBC's Anbarasan Ethrajan.
It was followed by an aftershock. Panicked residents ran from the homes. Many residents have been sleeping in the open since last week's earthquakes, which flattened several villages in remote areas.
In those earlier earthquakes, more than 1,300 people were killed. This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples store.
Moments like genius.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. People advocating against gerrymandered political maps in Wisconsin hope to derail a new Republican effort to overhaul the process. They say the so-called Iowa-style plan would make matters worse. Mike Moan reports.
Political researchers have long noted that Wisconsin has some of the most gerrymandered maps in the U.S., and Republican lawmakers have controlled the process in recent cycles. They're now pushing through a new plan to create an independent panel to draw new boundaries. But Yuseli Flores of the Wisconsin Fair Maps Coalition says it contains loopholes that would allow the GOP to essentially keep the reins.
And it just seems like a huge power grab that could permanently change the process for how we draw our state maps, and it just feels like it's going to be detrimental to our communities.
The coalition and Democratic Governor Tony Evers have embraced the idea of an independent process, but they contend this Republican plan doesn't have a high enough threshold to prevent the legislature from intervening. They're urging the Senate to reject the bill, which recently cleared the Assembly. GOP leaders say it's an opportunity to adopt changes constituents have been demanding. But skeptics say this is strictly a response to the state Supreme Court and its new liberal majority agreeing to hear challenges to the most recent maps. Flores says while that plays out, the public doesn't need to be excluded from a rushed attempt to establish new rules.
And what we need is a more independent, transparent, and inclusive process, rather than what they showed us.
If the state Senate gives its approval, Governor Evers has vowed to veto the bill. Meanwhile, the Wisconsin Supreme Court is scheduled to hear arguments in the redistricting case next month. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute.
Weekdays from 4 until 6
on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It's Friday the 13th. Kind of has that feel to it, because it's one of those rare times that I'm not going to tell you that it's another beautiful day up north to have you here from wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network or the Civic Media app or by podcast or social media. Nope, I'm not going to tell you it's a beautiful day because it is cold. It is rainy. I'm looking at the map right now and it's going to be raining for some time to come. It's just a monster storm system, not a severe storm system. It's not a blizzard system, but I mean, it's just a monster in size, you know, rainmaker that stretches all the way. It's basically all of South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Iowa, Nebraska, Northern Illinois. That's just all covered in green on the radar. And it's just going to sit and spin over us for a good part of the day. So, don't skimp on the rain gear today, and we'll get the full weatherology forecast coming up in just a little bit. Coming up on this Friday, the main story we're going to be talking about is, you know, Dysfunction Junction up in Washington, D.C. We're going to talk about the inability of the people who have majority control of the United States House of Representatives to choose a new speaker. They came all together as a caucus, picked a leading candidate who had a majority of the votes, but not enough to overcome their slim majority in the House. And basically, eight Republicans are gumming up the works and preventing House Republicans from choosing a leader among themselves. We will talk to a Courier Newsroom national correspondent, Kiev Akil, and we'll talk to author and media critic Mark Jacob this morning. We'll also talk about the Republicans in the legislature in Madison passing a series of hateful bills yesterday rather than providing any kind of useful solutions to the things that are going on in our world. And Kia, by the way, will also talk about how at least one person is out there sticking up for us. We'll talk about President Biden going after all those junk fees on our bills from airlines and concerts and everything, you know, credit cards, you name it. Somebody's got to take that on finally. So at least somebody's getting something done. And I'll prattle on for a little bit about being at the Pablo Center in Eau Claire last night to see Mary Chapin Carpenter and Sean Colvin, a very lovely acoustic set that they put on for a lot of very satisfied customers in Eau Claire. And so it made for kind of a light or late night, which might explain why I'm feeling a little bit draggy this morning, Sam Davison. But Sam, you give me reason to be optimistic about the weekend, because if nothing else, we have the big doings in Ringle this weekend. What?
The big event. The biggest event. It's like the biggest thing to happen in Ringle all year long. Nothing else happens there. It is the Ringle Harvest Fest, the 27th annual.
It says here the annual Ringgold Harvest Day or Harvest Fest. Yeah, it's there will be all kinds of vendors, craft vendors, in a barn from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Let's see. Let me look at the flyer here. There's going to be a petting zoo, free admission and parking, rain or shine, which is a good thing because it's going to be rain, a vintage market. It's the antique dealer's best kept secret, it says. Stroll from booth to booth through our small town, just 12 miles east of Wausau, just off Highway 29. What do you do during it?
It's been like 3 or 4 years since I was there for it. It was before COVID, but I just kind of wander around and check out all the booths.
I'm wondering is there a beer tent? Is there music? Or is it mostly just crafts and vendors and things like that?
Might be. I don't know. I guess I didn't pay attention to that because I wasn't 21 last time I went. I'll have to look this time.
I'll tell you what's different this time compared to other events. When I called up the Facebook page for this, the first two photos are of lonely little outhouses. And I scroll down to the post and it says, just a reminder, there are no indoor toilets at our event. Good old country living. Septics just can't do it. However, there are 6 porta potties around for your convenience. Thanks for understanding. So you got that, you know, porta. That's all you need. Well, no, some people could do more. Again, sometimes it's good to be a boy, but hey, forewarned is forearmed. You now know. So I'm having a little fun with it, but really when it's in the same vein as, you know, the Cranberry Fest in Warrens, the Cranberry Fest in Stone Lake, so many other things where it is, it's a whole lot of vendors and crafts. There's all kinds of things you can get. Frankly, the farmers markets are that way now, whether you're in Eau Claire or Madison or wherever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some produce and things, but, you know, there's also all kinds of crafts and knickknacks, and it is technically time to start thinking about Christmas shopping. So you might find a few things while you're there.
Yeah, I will need to find some gifts for people, so I might as well take a look.
There you go. I mean, take a look at it. Could be fun. So good. Well, I hope it's a great time. And let's take a break here. And when we come back, we will talk just briefly about the baseball playoffs, the weekend in sports. We'll talk to Dan Schumacher about it again near the end of the show. And then we'll unpack the news a little bit with things happening in Madison and D.C. And along the way, your phone calls are welcome at 844-967-2789. Hey, wherever you're listening, across Wisconsin, across the country, if you care to, over the interwebs and by podcast, when you're here, you're up north, and we'll be back right after this.
SimpliSafe, we've designed award-winning home security with advanced sensors, HD cameras, and now this. 24/7 LiveGuard protection, only from SimpliSafe. Now, monitoring agents can see and speak to intruders through our new indoor camera to help stop crime in real time and for fast police response. Get 20% off any new system with Fast Protect monitoring at simplisafe.com/radio. Advanced home security, 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
Have you noticed bad behavior has become normalized at interscholastic athletic events? Some fans seem angry. They lack civility toward one another. Some even get aggressive and unruly. Time out! What is going on? This has to stop. Let's not forget, school sports aren't just about winning. And they're definitely not an excuse to take your frustrations out on the official or the opponent. They're about teaching lessons like perseverance, respect, and empathy, so students can learn and grow as people, not just as players. We all have a role to play in setting a good example for our students and teaching them these important values. So fans, it's time to step up your game and behave positively at interscholastic athletic events in Wisconsin.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal.
my way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
Very nice to see Sean Colvin in concert last night at Pablo Center in Eau Claire, along with Mary Chapin Carpenter. And yes, of course, Sonny Came Home was one of the tunes that was played, and Mary Chapin Carpenter played a lot of her greatest hits, and just so, I love her voice so much. And the two of them had a very good rapport as they do these shows together, just the two of them with a couple of acoustic guitars. Temperatures around the state have not changed since the last hour, 47 on Lake Wissota, 52 in Madison. Waukesha, you're at 48 degrees. La Crosse, 50. Wausau, 46. Wisconsin Rapids, 46. In Green Bay, it's 48 degrees right now. And in Hayward, 45. And pretty much everybody is either wet or going to get wet and going to get wetter. Meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki is taking a look at a very large storm system that's sitting over the upper Midwest and telling us what it's going to do for us this coming up weekend. Here are the details. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, you said it. I mean, we're looking at periods of showers for today as a warm front passes just to the south of the state. So a bit of moisture ahead of that system, holding pretty steady in the low to mid-50s for the southern half of the state today. Not much movement compared to where we're currently at. Then mid to upper 40s from Wausau, Wisconsin Rapids, and over towards west central Wisconsin. For the weekend, a chance for showers and storms has started out for most on Saturday. Just cloudy skies expected around Amory and Baldwin. Highs in the mid to low 50s. A little warmer in the upper 50s around Richland Center. Sunday, it looks like sunshine around Amory and Baldwin. Cloudy skies for everyone else with a chance for showers around Milwaukee and Waukesha. Temperature-wise, similar to Saturday, expecting to see highs in the mid to low 50s. Then to start out the new work week on Monday, a slight chance for rain once again for southeastern Wisconsin. Otherwise, cloudy for most except for western Wisconsin, Amory, Baldwin down to Richland Center. Starting to see some sunshine coming in. And then again, highs lingering in the mid to low 50s.
Jen, I asked this question only because we have to start thinking about, you know, translating rain to snow because we're getting to that time of year. A system like this sitting over us, is it something that would have brought a lot of snow or would have been just a lot of nuisance, you know, blowing but light snow? We have to train our minds to think about what a storm like this would do.
Well, yeah, so it looks like, I mean, for the day, today what we're expecting to see is between 3/4 of an inch to 1 inch possible. So that would actually translate to about 10 inches of snow if we would have gotten to the cooler temperatures. So, yeah, I mean, it's it is going to be pretty windy, so that would make it not great as well. But, yeah, I mean, it would be up to about 10 inches of snow.
Well, and that's what my wife and I were saying walking to our car last night after the concert was like, it's not snow. It's not snow. It's not snow. So we've got that going for us. Jen, thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Always nice to visit with Jennifer Wojcicki from Weatherology to give us the forecast as we head into the weekend here. All right. I have an editorial that's going to be coming out Monday, I think, in our newsletter for Up North News that I was working on yesterday. And it starts with a truism that every reporter needs to keep in mind when you're reporting about statistics, specifically, you know, what somebody else is saying about statistics. And I saw it in cartoon form, and it sat on my desk at TV 13 for the longest time. And the saying goes something like this. A politician relies on statistics the way a drunk relies on a lamppost for support, not illumination. And that's the only way to explain kind of the half-baked way that certain people have reported on numbers that were provided recently by the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction, or DPI. And the topic of the numbers is proficiency. Do students have the skills for the grade level that they're at? And last week's numbers, it would be fair to call them a mixed bag, and that you could look at them as a glass half empty or glass half full thing. You could say students in Wisconsin tested higher than last year, but they're still lower than they were before the pandemic. Or you could say students are still testing at below levels seen before the pandemic, but they are on the rise. So you can make it spin either way. But sometimes the spinning is so violent that it causes nausea. For example, the critics of public education are crowing about how the proficiency numbers, well, let me quote one headline, "Wisconsin public school students struggle with reading and math." And the inference, of course, is that voucher school students test better. They do not. And I would call your attention to the Wisconsin Examiner. Go to wisconsinexaminer.com. Wonderful outlet that Ruth Conniff and her team put together. And Ruth Conniff in the Wisconsin Examiner takes those folks to task for not telling you the whole story on the proficiency numbers. She notes in a column that schools in the Wisconsin Parental Choice Program score almost 17 points worse than public schools in English and language arts, with a total proficiency of 22% compared to the public schools 39%. They did even worse in math. The voucher schools score 18% proficiency versus the public schools 38%. So much for the school voucher program as a magic bullet to fix education, she writes. Conniff then goes on to show how voucher school advocates have cherry-picked the data to put the best possible spin on numbers that frankly aren't great in any setting. Because look, the news that fewer than half of Wisconsin students are reading, writing, and doing math below their grade level should be very concerning. But no one should see the full data and think to themselves, huh, what we need here is Wisconsin taxpayers paying for two parallel school systems in the state, especially when one of those school systems has proficiency numbers that on the whole are worse than our public schools, or worse than those voucher school numbers are worse than public schools. Wisconsin's public schools deserve from our elected officials a greater commitment to finding the solutions that help every child, regardless of their household income, regardless of their race, regardless of their zip code. They should have the opportunities to learn and to learn at their grade level rather than being caught in this tug of war when one side is frankly using fuzzy math when it comes to spinning the statistics that they want to claim are on their side. There were new inflation numbers that came out yesterday. Was it yesterday or the day before? Sorry, maybe it was Wednesday. Noting that the consumer price index inflation held steady at 3.7% year on year and grew only 0.4% from a month-to-month basis. Core inflation is down to 4.1% year over year. Inflation is falling even more sharply in used vehicle prices and medical care, but shelter and medical care services, inflation is still running rather high. Now, in all cases, it's down from, you know, the 9% levels that we were seeing during some of the worst of the pandemic recession. But among all of the developed Western democracies around the world, inflation in the United States remains lower than everybody else's. And so despite all of the folks who are essentially cheerleading and rooting for a recession because it would help them politically, you know, the numbers don't lie. And the numbers show that while inflation remains stubborn and continues to hang on, it is getting lower. It is getting better here faster than everybody else because of the decisions that are being made in the executive branch by people like President Biden and Governor Tony Evers, and in the legislative branch, like the way that a Democratic-led Congress in the first 2 years of Biden's term put forth the investments in the American Rescue Plan, the Inflation Reduction Act, the Bipartisan Infrastructure Bill, and more. That's where policy matters. We're making the right calls on how to most wisely spend our tax dollars can actually do a lot of good, not right away, maybe not even before the next election, but you're still doing the right thing if in the end it's a net positive. And that's what Democrats did. They lost the majority in the House, but the policies that they put in place continue to keep inflation lower here than any other developed Western democracy. One other note I stumbled upon here, and it deals again with Republican Party politics. And again, bear in mind that we're not hearing much about Republican Party proposals because there just frankly aren't any Republican Party proposals. There's infighting about who will be speaker. There's rooting for a recession. But there's not much in terms of proposals because we have, a theme that we hit on a lot here, we have people who know how to win elections. They know how to be competitive, but they don't know how to govern. They don't know how to actually serve. It's all about the winning. And somebody discovered some time back this quote: "The whole secret of politics is knowing who hates who." And that quote kicks off a column from Greg Sargent in the Washington Post. And the quote was from Kevin Phillips. You don't know him. I don't know him. But you know his work. He's a longtime political analyst. He died this week at the age of 82. He wrote a book in 1969 called The Emerging Republican Majority. And it really should have been subtitled The Southern Strategy, because it's what the Republican Party adopted for decades, Sargent writes, to win over white voters who could then claim to feel alienated by the Democratic Party's embrace of civil rights in the 1960s. It was Kevin Phillips who advised Republicans to exploit the racial anxieties of white voters and link that anxiety directly to crime and to federal spending and to voting rights. And that strategy, which gave Richard Nixon a 49-state landslide victory in 1972, helped produce GOP majorities for decades. Updated versions of that Southern strategy live on in today's Republican Party. We see it in all manner of code words about everything from spending to pandemic aid to welfare, having that money drawn away. And we haven't even had time this week to talk about Brett Favre and the trouble that he continues to be in from rooting for welfare money to be misappropriated for his own advocacy use. But this Southern strategy lives on in the voucher school debates and in everything else that permeates politics. And it's not just racial. You're looking constantly, if you're part of this strategy, you're looking for ways to punch down. And that's what we saw in the Wisconsin legislature yesterday, was hours and hours and hours of punching down on the LGBTQ community and trans youth specifically. It gets used all the time because it works. And the only way it's going to stop working is through the proliferation of other voices, whether it's places like Civic Media, Up North News, or others, to expose it and tell you the truth. Mark Jacob helps continue this discussion right after this. You're Up North.
CBS News special report. Israeli ground troops have been on a recovery mission to find bodies inside Gaza. Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner says they've been partially successful.
There were Israelis retrieved in the ground operations.
Egyptian officials say they will open a border with Gaza to let humanitarian aid in and to let people trying to escape get out. Hanino Kahl is an American trying to get home to New Jersey.
My kids are feeling so scared. I had to calm them down and get them distracted all the time. I don't know what's going to happen, but what I know is that I need to be in a safe place. Me, my kids, I need to go meet my husband again.
Federal law enforcement is monitoring threats to the U.S., particularly to Jewish synagogues and Muslim mosques. FBI Director Christopher Wray.
Over the past week, We have seen an increase in reported threats to these groups here in the United States, and we're moving quickly to mitigate them.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Peter King.
Have you noticed bad behavior has become normalized at interscholastic athletic events? Some fans seem angry. They lack civility toward one another. Some even get aggressive and unruly. Time out! What is going on? This has to stop. Let's not forget, school sports aren't just about winning. And they're definitely not an excuse to take your frustrations out on the official or the opponent. They're about teaching lessons like perseverance, respect, and empathy, so students can learn and grow as people, not just as players. We all have a role to play in setting a good example for our students and teaching them these important values. So fans, it's time to step up your game and behave positively at interscholastic athletic events in Wisconsin.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Timeout.
All right. Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hello, Mary Lou. Goodbye, heart. Sweet Mary Lou, I'm so in love with you.
The Ricky Nelson song there is one of several oldies but goodies that are mentioned in Jay Kaminsky's new book, Beneath the Polish Moon. A love letter, if you will, toward a childhood in Milwaukee, a childhood in Wisconsin, anywhere, really, you could say. Just need to substitute some communities and some landmarks. But, you know, talking about coming of age in that era and then trying to not lose touch with those memories when, you know, when we end up doing what we now refer to as adulting and not always in Wisconsin. And Jake is here to tell us all about it. Jake, good morning. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Senator. It's really a pleasure to be here, and I want to thank you for the invitation.
Well, my pleasure. When the book came out, and I took a look at some of the comments about it, it was quite clear that everybody was on the same page of enjoying the nostalgia. But you took it to a different point, that it wasn't just nostalgia. It was nostalgia that had basically gotten lost along the way as the central character here, you know, grew up and became a police officer in another state. Would it almost be fair to say that this is in part a cautionary tale for people, you know, not to wait too long to remember their roots?
Yeah, I think it is. I think, you know, when you sit down to write a book, in my experiences, you know, there's so much of yourself that ends up on the page. And my life took me far from Milwaukee. I mean, I grew up in a real, maybe I would say a very idyllic era in 1960, let's say, circa Milwaukee, where life was quite simple, at least for a child it was. And took me to Miami, running undercover teams for my career, and then later as an advisor to the State Department overseas in places like Bosnia, right after the war there. And, you know, of course, we lose our innocence. We know we do. But there was a time, I think I must have been, a little bit homesick when I was over in Bosnia and seeing a lot of the terrible things that were there. One of the things that struck me while I was there was I saw children, even amongst the ruins of the war, playing. And it just reminded me of how simple life was as a kid. And so I decided, you know, I'd really like to recapture that because it was such a special time in my life. The friendships were probably the purest of any friendships I've ever had. And I think with this book, I think it's the thing that's resonated with people from all over the country, not just in Milwaukee, is that those childhood memories were so precious, but they were also kind of without anything, without jealousy, without, you know, and any of the things that us adults have as we get older. And I just kind of wanted to show the contrast between the two.
And then there's the mischief, the individual stories that we have in reading the stories of the boys that were growing up here. I was struck by the fact that any of us have stories that if we could write them down and if we had a little bit more writing talent, people would love to hear them. I think of my late father growing up in St. Paul, and there is a chapter in your book about the kids basically crawling under a bridge to try to, you know, get closer to these pigeons. And I remember my dad talking about as a boy, anybody who's been to St. Paul knows the high bridge that goes over the Mississippi River, and mm-hmm. how, you know, one of the things they would do almost on a dare or an adventure is scale that bridge, the underside of the bridge, all the way across the Mississippi River. That and so many other stories that people tell. People have these stories, but then to get them down on paper is another matter. How long did it take you from concept to completion to work on Beneath the Polish Moon?
You know, really concept, what I would say, it was in my mind for years. And in fact, I was in the middle of writing my second novel, which was a sequel to my first, and I just stopped writing it and had to write the story. And it was just something that I had to tell. And I think, you know, life is, in my mind, a little bit, we have all these little perfect moments in our life that we can remember with such clarity. And so many of those perfect moments were from when I was a child. And again, these innocent times, but they were quite adventurous. And kids were allowed to do a lot of things that they aren't allowed to do without supervision now.
You know what we've lost track of as well, and this brings me back to the title of the book, is for all of the discussions we have now about immigration, migrants, the southern border, one of my observations is that far too many of our current leaders have forgotten that they really are not that far removed from their own immigrants, you know, family ties, whether it's grandparents, great-grandparents, whatever the case may be. The Polish Moon in the title, as I mentioned earlier in the show, refers to the large clock tower, the large bright face on it at the old Allen Bradley factory that was there. But you begin with, you know, the Polish ancestry of the family in this book, and bringing those values, bringing that work ethic to America and to the Milwaukee area, and really Wisconsin, and then places beyond, Minnesota, Iowa, and so forth, were established by people who had an amazing work ethic and an amazing dedication to family that we take for granted. But you really don't see that everywhere around the world.
No, and you know, it's a funny thing when you talk about this immigration stuff. And you know, as kids, we were Polish kids. It was a strange thing. You were American, but you were Polish, and you lived in a Polish world, particularly in the south side of the city of Milwaukee. But I went back to write this book. I wrote a lot of it at a coffee shop, Collectivo, down in the middle of the old neighborhood. And a lot of times I just park on the street near where my grandmother's house used to be. And I saw a little old lady come out to put her garbage out. And she was just in a simple cotton dress. And she could have been my grandmother. The only difference between her and my grandmother is she spoke Spanish instead of Polish. There's absolutely no difference. It was new people finding their way and working their butts off to get make things better. And I was it really struck me when I went back, because there's no difference. It's just a different language, but there's the same experience exactly as us.
Yeah, I noticed that as well with Facebook has a lot of these groups now. There's old Eau Claire and there's old St. Paul, and I'm sure there's some that are dedicated to Milwaukee as well, where you can see those old neighborhoods. And you come back to the old neighborhood in this tale, and it's not the story of, oh, this place has really fallen apart and you know, these people don't take care of their neighborhood the way that we do. You recognize, as I do whenever I drive through some of these older Milwaukee neighborhoods, that these are like every other family at some point. These are families that are just trying to get themselves established, trying to scratch out a living, and their kids are thankfully oftentimes oblivious to that and off, you know, living their own adventures. And that still happens for all of the discussion about, you know, gangs and crime, which is very real. But I think you help people remember that there are plenty of others out there who are just scratching out a living and having adventures along the way in their old neighborhoods, wherever they are.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes I have to remind myself, and, you know, when I look back, we were poor, but as kids, we didn't know it. I mean, our life was rich. I mean, we didn't have a television. My dad didn't even start driving till I was about 10 or 11. But you didn't know it. As far as you were concerned, life was good. And we all kind of, all those kids from the old neighborhood, I still am in touch with a few of them, and they've all done well and they're comfortable. But it's just part of that experience of coming into the world, into America, and making something of yourself. And I think it's still going on. And I felt it. I felt the energy when I was in Milwaukee writing this book 50 years later.
Let's turn more toward the present day character, because again, you do tell two stories in here that meld in the book. And that is, again, going on to a career in law enforcement from one of the central characters in the book. We are in an era now where, for various reasons that we don't need to get into here, but, you know, law enforcement is seen through different lenses, as frankly, well, it should be, because, you know, not every law enforcement officer is the same. Forgive the cliche, but there are good cops and there are bad cops. And you tell the classic story of a good cop. And for those folks, for those officers out there who are there to serve, life is really rough sometimes.
I think it is. But in a way, in retrospect, I think it's always been that way. It's funny, I broke into the job way in the mid 70s. And those were the days of what do you call them, hippies or whatever, but there was a lot of anti-police, and the police were also thrust in the middle of the civil rights movement, whether they liked it or not. They had to stand the line, I think. And, you know, we were called pigs. I see it as somewhat different because there's much more media now, but I think it's always been a really tough job. And it's a job that, you know, the cops get exposed to, not even so much. It's not like on TV where cops are constantly solving a horrible murder, or they're having to shoot somebody or something like that. But I think I always viewed as that they have to watch. They have a bird's eye seat to man's inhumanity to man. And I mean that as humanity, not men or women. But they see what people are capable of doing to each other, either through passion or through evilness. And I think just being that spectator changes their life, whether they like it or not. No one can watch that for 25 years and have it not affect them, and have it affect them during their career. That they might react badly or they might react well, but it is a stressful job that most people don't have to see. I think it's that spectator that they have to be, which is, it's sort of dehumanizing, I think, to any normal person with a good moral center.
It's tough for anybody to unplug from a job, whatever level of stress is involved here. And look, we're not going to be 18 all the time. But in this case, again, the main character, we see kind of the courtship. We see a relationship that blossoms, but then eventually, you know, stress takes its toll on it because of, you know, how tough it is to be a law enforcement officer in this particular case. But again, I what I see in what you're writing there is a reminder to folks, not only to not forget their roots as their childhood, but not forget their roots from a relationship standpoint, to like, to basically to never stop dating, never stop courting, never let, as tough as life is, don't let that be an impediment to your relationship, because otherwise, you know, it leads to heartache and worse.
I agree. And I think all of us, as we get older, when we start to realize what was really important in life, I think we all have a bit of self-examination. And maybe part of that came into me writing this story. But I think you do start to think, wow, did it really matter that I was upset with somebody in the office or at the police department or the fire, anywhere you work? Was that really, were those little petty arguments worth it that I twisted myself in knots over, when the real important things are much closer to your heart and much closer to home?
Tell me about the novels that you like to work on, because I don't know that this is a book that necessarily lends itself to a sequel. I think it's a great one-off in terms of childhood and the tales involved, but you work on novels as well. Tell me about those.
Yeah, I have my first book was called Shadow Wolves, and it's a much more serious book than this. I would say it's a thriller. It's about a group of Native American trackers who work at the border against the drug cartels, and that was well received by the critics. I mean, I'm still not Stephen King's not losing any sleep over me, but the sequel I have coming out hopefully in the spring, it's finished. It's just with the editors now. It's called Labyrinth, and it's a sequel to that story, a continuing story of the saga of a battle with the Mexican drug cartels.
Wow. So then back to, let's close on the kind of more of the innocent childhood note, that's in the book. And some things are so different now. We were told, you and I were both of generations that were told, go outside and play, and don't come back until the streetlights come on. Just don't bug me. Very few parents went to their kids, sporting events and things. There are so many things that are different. Do you feel like if people see this book, it will help let their kids be kids, at least for a little bit more than maybe they do now?
I wish it would, because everything you said is exactly what I was thinking while writing the book. I mean, you're right on target, and it's true. I mean, if someone would have put my mother under a interrogation room and said, where's Jake right now? Well, I don't know. He'll be here when it gets dark or when he's hungry. But we really, I think we were self-sufficient. I think it built a little independence in us because we could think things out for ourselves and take care of ourselves.
Yeah. And kids are resilient that way. We need to protect them, but we need to remember they bounce as well. Beneath the Polish Moon, Jake Kaminski, look for this online. It was so great to get the opportunity to read this and talk to you, Jake. Let us know when you've got a new novel that we want to talk about. And thanks for visiting with us this morning.
Thank you so much, Pat. Bye-bye.
Yep. When we come back, Chad Holmes will join us to tell us what's on Bull Falls Radio on his show coming up next in the Wausau area. This is Up North News Radio. We'll be back after this.
People across Wisconsin are enjoying the rewards, stability, and flexibility of a career in healthcare. Why not you? WIS Caregiver Careers can get you started as a certified direct care professional. You'll learn the skills you need to make life better for older adults or people with a disability. All training is free and online, plus earn $500 in bonuses. Start your new career. Sign up today at WISCaregiverCDCP.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
Have you noticed bad behavior has become normalized at interscholastic athletic events? Some fans seem angry. They lack civility toward one another. Some even get aggressive and unruly. Time out! What is going on? This has to stop. Let's not forget, school sports aren't just about winning. And they're definitely not an excuse to take your frustrations out on the official or the opponent. They're about teaching lessons like perseverance, respect, and empathy, so students can learn and grow as people, not just as players. We all have a role to play in setting a good example for our students and teaching them these important values. So fans, it's time to step up your game and behave positively at interscholastic athletic events in Wisconsin.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
The Attention high school sports fans, are you an armchair official? You know, the parent or fan who constantly yells at the referees and loves to let everyone know just how bad you think they are. Well, if you think you could do better, then get in the game and prove it. It's time for you to suit up and make the calls where they actually count. Every sport in Wisconsin needs more officials. Sign up today at highschoolofficials.com.
All right, coming up next on the Civic Media Radio Network, you have James and the Gang in Wisconsin Rapids, Stephanie Miller in Madison, Chad Holmes in Wausau, Stu Daniels in the Chippewa Valley, La Crosse, Hayward, and Oshkosh, Earl Ingram in Waukesha, Green Bay, and Racine. They're all followed by As Goes Wisconsin, and then the news at noon, Town Call at 12:15, and Todd Alba at 1 o'clock. But right now, let's visit with Dan Schumacher. What was our Grateful Dead song? It sounded weather-related.
Cold Rain and Snow.
Yeah,
that sounds... And it was an older version. He played the studio version from like 1970, I want to say.
Okay.
So, hopefully
Do you listen to studio versions very much of Grateful Dead?
Not much at all. Yeah. Not much at all. I have all of them on CDs, but I never listen to them. I like putting on the app. That there's an app, Grateful Dead app, that it's nothing but live concerts. Oh. So I'd rather listen to the live versions of it.
I would imagine then when you talk about CDs that you've got, is there like a definitive box set of everything or no?
Yes, there is. There actually is. So they have it split up into eras and also split up into, before we're going down a rabbit hole here, it's just different versions of the band. You know, sure. They used to have a female singer with them at one time.
Oh,
so there's box sets on that stuff. When Donna Gian Gacha was a singer with them while their husband was the piano player, but then it changed again and a new sound came out with Brent Midland. And so it's always different. There's all kinds of, they've gone through like five piano players that have passed away. So.
I ask because I know that I have the box set. I don't even remember what it's called anymore, but the definitive Beatles box set with all the remastered. And I think only once on like a rainy weekend did I listen like front to back from the very first Beatles album through the last one. It's not something you do all the time, but it's one of those things. It's nice to have so that you can pick something out and just pop that in. Whoever thought we'd be referring to the CD player as old fashioned, but if you want to listen to music the old fashioned way. All right, let's get to sports. We'll do the Badgers first here. The Badger football team plays tomorrow afternoon at Camp Randall Stadium, taking on Iowa. That's a 3 o'clock game on Fox. And the number one ranked Badger women's volleyball team, they're now 15-0, and they're in action at the Fieldhouse tonight, taking on Rutgers. Over in the baseball playoffs, the Phillies eliminated the Braves for the second straight year, winning 3-1 last night. And so the Phillies advanced to play the Diamondbacks, who swept the Brewers, and then they swept the Dodgers. Game one is Monday night in Philadelphia. Sunday night is when the American League Championship Series begins. It's a Lone Star State showdown as the Houston Astros will host the Texas Rangers again. That's on Sunday night, and that's an all wild card National League Championship Series. You had Arizona taking out the Brewers, the Central Division winner, and then the Dodgers, the Western Division winner. The Phillies took out the Braves, who won 100 games over in the East. A lot of people are saying, you know, that this proves that there's something faulty about the playoffs. And at the risk of sounding like an old man, Dan, my take on it is you knew what the schedule was going to be, so you know, you play for the schedule that's given to you, not the one you want.
Want, right, exactly. I agree with you 100% on that one. Mm-hmm. It does seem like all the favorites that, you know, went down. I was really surprised Atlanta lost. That was the one I thought.
I was surprised the Dodgers.
The Dodgers too, yep.
I mean, everybody was really thinking that was going to be, you know, the NLCS for the ages, was to watch these two. And neither one's there. I mean, the Diamondbacks could run out of steam at any point here. The Phillies, I have a soft spot for Bryce Harper. I watched him come up with the Nationals, and they almost went all the way
was it 2017 or 2018, and the Nats had to trade him away. And so when the Nats won the World Series in 2019, they did it without him, and he went to a division rival. But he has been more than adopted by the Philadelphia community, and he had those two home runs in the game the other day. So
Plus, he played really good defense the other night too.
Yes,
yeah. He made a couple of really good stabs on line, you know, down the line or in the gap between, you know, the second baseman and him.
There's been a lot of good defensive plays, and those defensive plays have been killers for Brewers fans and for Twins fans watching that Astros series, where the ball is hit that, you know, 9 times out of 10 they call it, oh, there's a seeing eyeball, you know, that gets into the outfield.
Yeah.
And the stabs that these infielders were making were just stabs through your chest, you know.
Yes, yes, no doubt, no doubt. Hey, I got one for you.
Yes, sir.
If the weather permits, I think the women's basketball season opens up in Iowa, where the Hawkeyes, women's Hawkeyes, top player in the country.
Caitlin Clark.
Caitlin Clark. Okay. Did you know that they sold 52,000 tickets for the football stadium to host a basketball game?
Wow.
Yeah, just because it was on my mind because I was thinking about the volleyball game that was played down in Nebraska.
Nebraska, right, yeah. In front
of, you know, 80,000 people. So women's sports is really – it's turned. It's turned. There's a fan base there. There's none of that old stigma or stereotype that it's boring or it's slow or whatever. They're drawing the fans in. Basketball, volleyball, you name it. It's a high level of competition.
Yep.
It's fun to watch. You know, got a daughter that played college sports, so I'm a big Title IX person. So I think it's great for sports what we're seeing on the female side.
All right, well, let's get up to your neck of the woods there at Northland College, and you know what is happening for interscholastic or
intercollegiate. Well, our men's soccer team is hot. Mm-hmm. Our men's soccer team is hot. We're in second place to only Superior, UW Superior. You know, I'm excited about it. I just hired a new men's basketball coach, so basketball practice started this week. So I was watching practice last night, and I like what I see there. You know, just trying to get better, trying to get an organization put together in the way that I feel that can give us the best chance to win. Be surprised on how big organization, having the right people in place from an administration standpoint, supports the coaches, which allows them to be coaches and not so much gophers and administrators. So I want them to coach, administrators administrate. So trying to build that type of structure to have some success up here, but we're seeing a little bit of success right now with our men's soccer team. Even our women's volleyball team is about 500 in middle of the pack, and they were picked last in the league, so they're overachieving there. So some really positive things that are going on.
Okay. Appreciate that very much. Boy, we haven't seen each other for a bit here. One of us is going to have to get to the other's hometown one of these days.
I know I got to come back because I got to fly out of the cities. I got to go down to the NCAA headquarters for meetings next week. And then the weekend after will be my last weekend down there because I'm going to rent my house.
You